The Watson Weekly is sponsored by Avalara, the agentic AI platform automating global tax and compliance for leading e-commerce brands. Go to avaleratax.watsonweekly.com for more details. It's April 20th, 2026, and this is the Watson Weekly, your essential e-commerce digest. Today on our show, what Sundar Pichai tells us about compute. Is Amazon finally cracking grocery, unpacking Jassy's 2025 shareholder letter? Vinted's 2025 annual results. And Apple's glasses play, late but maybe lethal. And finally, the Investor Minute, which contains five items this week from the world of venture capital, acquisitions, and IPOs. But first, actually, we're going to talk about a new webinar for a second. On April 23rd, 2026, I'm moderating a B2B webinar. When your customer is on a roof, your UX problems are their problems. Check out watsonweekly.com/events to register. What Sundar Pichai tells us about compute. What the world is getting wrong about Google right now. I listened to Sundar Pichai sit down with John Collison and Elad Gil recently, and I came away thinking, most people are still not taking the right lessons from this conversation. Everyone wants to debate whether Gemini is better than GPT or whether search is dead. Meanwhile, I think the actual interesting story is hiding in plain sight, and the idea that speed is a moat, a real one. Google has obsessed over latency since day one, famously displaying the millisecond query time right in the search results as kind of a flex, and that's always not been an accident. It was a statement of values. What Sundar describes in this conversation takes that further than most people realize. Search teams at Google operate with a formal millisecond-level latency budget. If you shave 3 milliseconds off a query, you earn 1.5 milliseconds of budget credit. That's not a line item in a slide deck, that's actually a cultural operating system. Now apply that same discipline to Gemini on TPUs. Flash models are running at 90% of pro capability, but dramatically faster and cheaper to serve. That's a compounding competitive advantage that could be hard to replicate going forward. And in a compute-constrained world, and we are absolutely in one right now, being fast and efficient is not just good user experience. It is survival. Sundar was remarkably candid about how constrained compute actually is. The company is spending between $175 and $185 billion in CapEx in 2026, and Google still cannot spend as much as it wants. The constraints are real and physical. Wafer starts, HBM memory supply, permitting timelines, electricians. These aren't software problems, and they're not money problems either. The practical implication that a lot of executives are missing is the companies who secure compute early are pulling away from people right now, and the gap simply cannot be wished away. There's not enough memory in the world to satisfy demand in 2026 or even next year, and some players are not going to get what they need. If your AI strategy assumes that compute will just be available when you need it, you should rethink that assumption immediately. And Sundar is one of the only executives talking seriously about data centers in space. And Elon Musk does get all the attention for thinking in civilizational timeframes. However, Sundar does quietly mention that Google already has a small team working on the concept of data centers in space as a long-term answer to the physical constraint problem. Think about what it takes to even have that conversation inside a company. You need leadership that genuinely believes the compute build-out curve extends far enough into the future to make orbital infrastructure relevant. And that's a different kind of conviction than most CEOs are operating with. This is a small team with a small budget working towards their first milestone, similar to the way Waymo started. If you're sitting on the sidelines because implementing AI feels too complex or too unstable, you're making a timing bet. And Sundar's view, which I kind of share, is that window for that excuse is closing faster than most people expect. Sundar spends one dedicated hour per week on compute allocation. That was one fact that stuck with me more than anything else in the entire conversation. One of the most complex organizations on earth, the CEO blocks a specific hour every week to review compute allocation at a project by project and team level. He knows which teams are using compute and which units. And to me, that highlights a different kind of company than the narrative suggested a year ago when everyone was writing Google's obituary. Our next story. Is Amazon finally cracking grocery? Unpacking Jassy's 2025 shareholder letter. Every April, the Amazon shareholder letter drops, and every April, I kind of get 50 direct messages asking me the same thing. Is this the year Amazon finally cracks grocery? And maybe for about the last 8 years, my answer has been, not really, keep watching. Well, it seems like this number was a lot more positive and made me sit up. And so I wanted to walk you through what's going on, the real version, not the press release version. And the line buried in the middle of the letter, Amazon's grocery business did over $150 billion in gross sales in 2025. And that makes them, of course, by Amazon's math, the second largest grocer in the United States. Now, before you tweet that out, gross sales does a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence. The number, of course, includes non-perishables, the shelf-stable stuff that Amazon is great at. It also includes, of course, Whole Foods and the dwindling Amazon Fresh supply. It also includes third-party marketplace grocery. For Walmart, grocery is somewhere north of $270 billion, and it's almost all food people actually eat this week. So Amazon's second-largest grocer is not the same set of SKUs than Walmart's first grocer. However, the trajectory for Amazon is real, and Jassy is telling you how to look. And so when Jassy writes that they're starting putting perishables into their same-day delivery network in early 2025, those sales have grown over 40 times, 4-0. And 9 out of the top 10 most ordered items in same-day delivery are now fresh food in the markets where it's available. So this is the thing I think Amazon has been trying to figure out for a decade. Amazon Fresh went from a standalone service in 2007. Everyone remembers maybe Prime Now. The Whole Foods acquisition came along. Whole Foods kind of stayed Whole Foods. New Fresh stores opened and closed. They tried Just Walk Out. That didn't work either. Dash carts. Where did those go? What finally worked wasn't a new store concept, and it wasn't a new app. It was just boring logistics, meaning like Amazon being Amazon. That's the whole unlock. So what are the reasons that this matters? First of all, I think frequency. Grocery is the highest frequency retail category there is, basically. If Amazon becomes your default for perishables, you're not opening the app twice a month, you're opening it many times a week. That changes the lifetime value math of every Prime member. It changes ads, it changes what Amazon knows about you, etc. And second, Amazon now has same-day fresh delivery in over 2,300 towns and cities. It's not just the coast anymore. And with the $4 billion they're spending on rural delivery, Jassy also talks about you're pushing Amazon into Walmart's home turf. Third, Whole Foods is also accelerating. They're adding 100 new stores this year with a smaller format as well called Daily Shop. That's a shot at Trader Joe's, Sprouts, those kinds of stores. Now, of course, I'm not here to read to you the Amazon brochure. The margins for grocery are not great. Kroger runs at 1.5, 2% operating margin on a good day. Amazon can afford to subsidize fresh in the same truck because they have the economics. Everything subsidizes these groceries. And of course, second largest grocer is kind of a marketing line. It's not the second largest fresh grocer, but if you consider that Amazon has the largest middle aisle in the history of grocery, it probably does that. And finally, of course, most of Amazon's grocery experiments failed. The letter does do a bit of revisionist history on their grocery journey. But the bottom line is they do have a grocery strategy. It has changed 4 or 5 times, but it seems to finally, for fuck's sake, in 2026, finally be crystallizing. And it only took them 18 years. Our third story, Vinted's 2025 annual results. Vinted, the European C2C secondhand marketplace out of Lithuania, grew GMV 47% year-over-year to 10.8 billion euros. The net profit, 62 million euros. Now, of course, 47% GMV growth at this scale, it's a big number. I don't necessarily care what category you're in. eBay isn't doing that growth. Obviously, Poshmark, ThredUp. This is a European company who's actually running away with a secondhand category while everyone in the US is still kind of debating, is resale a real business? And of course, profit did go the other way, meaning net profit was down 19%. Their adjusted EBITDA was down 5%, and revenue is up 38%, and profit is down. And so margin compression, of course, is happening, but the CEO is also making investments. He's trading near-term profits for how does he invest in his ecosystem? And how are they doing that? They're expanding categories by going into sports and collectibles, not just into core fashion. They've expanded more countries in Europe, and they're also creating vertical integration and infrastructure underneath the marketplace. So Vinted has an in-house carrier called Vinted Go, which launched in Spain and Portugal this year. They opened a new sort center in France. They now have carrier services in 5 markets, and they started testing third-party logistics for external customers. So could the logistics arm become its own business? They also have Vinted Pay, onboarding members to their own wallet in 2025. Every euro they save can go back into making the marketplace cheaper for its members. And they're not just becoming a marketplace, they're becoming this vertically integrated re-commerce stack, marketplace plus shipping plus payments. That sounds to me like the Amazon playbook. It's hard to replicate when it's built. Free cash flow, which is a good metric for this company, came in at 137 million, up 36%. So the cash engine is actually healthy. The company is not burning money to grow. This is a profitable company that's choosing to reinvest. If you look at where Europe is from a secondhand apparel point of view, it's consolidating around Vinted the same way e-commerce consolidated around Amazon 20 years ago. They have scale, they seem to have network effects and lower costs than their competitors. Now they're building shipping and payment rails that could make it impossible for others to compete head-on with them. And if you're a US re-commerce player, your ThredUp, your Poshmark, the RealReal, you are a little bit worried about this 2025 result from Vinted and that GMV growth, 47%, that they're talking about. And our last story, Apple's glasses play, late but maybe lethal. We heard a leaked memo in the last week that Amazon is building smart glasses a la Meta. This is codenamed N50. No display, camera, microphones, series, pairs with your iPhone. Sound familiar? Obviously, Meta has been shipping this product with Ray-Ban for the past couple of years, selling them, and that business has been growing from a small base. And everyone is, of course, going to say Apple's late, the Vision Pro didn't work out, what's going to happen here? But ultimately, Apple's never really been first to a category. They weren't first to MP3s, they weren't first to smartphones, they weren't first to tablets necessarily, they weren't first to smartwatches. Sensing a pattern here? When they enter a category, they tend to redefine the product. Now, is the visionary there? We'll see. But their distribution and integration in particular does matter. Apple has a billion plus iPhone users. They have physical retail. They have their own silicon. And when these glasses ultimately ship in 2027, plugging that into an iPhone will be a lot simpler than every other AI that you're trying to plug in. And so that's the bet. If Siri works, which, oh my God, Siri, you are in big trouble. If Siri doesn't work, this whole thing is not going to work at all. But I think the design is interesting. 4 frame styles, acetate, not cheap plastic. They're building their own frames, colors like ocean blue, light brown. They're treating this like a fashion product, not a tech product. And I think that's the right instinct because it fits more in the Apple mantra. Meta did figure out something important with Ray-Ban. People will wear a computer on their face if it maybe doesn't look like a computer. So just to zoom out for a second, glasses in 2027, Foldable phones could be coming this year. Apple is reshuffling its AI leadership. This is a company betting that the next 5 years doesn't look like the next five. And for everything, it kind of hinges on Siri. And we're still waiting, perhaps for Apple Developer Day this year, to see what drops. It's that time, friends, for our Investor Minute. We have five items on the menu today. First, premium resale platform Croissant announced it's raised $28 million in funding. Second, OpenAI has acquired streaming business talk show TBPN for an undisclosed amount. Remember when Fiji Simo talked to us about Focus? Yeah, me too. Story 3. Bed Bath & Beyond announced that it acquired The Container Store for $150 million. Story 4. Dallas-based private equity firm Trive Capital announced that it made an undisclosed investment in special occasion apparel brand Adriana Papel. And finally, Unilever announced it's acquired green supplement company Grüns for an undisclosed price. That's all for this week. Till next time, Watsonians. Hi, I'm Rick Watson, CEO and founder of RMW Commerce Consulting and host of the Watson Weekly Podcast, your essential e-commerce digest. I read a newsletter you can subscribe to at watsonweekly.com. Check it out there. Come back to me, hit me up, tell me what you think.